Welcome, everybody, to another Down Under Centre Moving to Australia podcast. Today's a really good one. We're joined by Chris, who's just recently become an Australian citizen. So, Chris, welcome, mate.
Yeah, hi, Wes. Hi, everyone.
So, mate, congratulations. You're an Aussie.
Yeah, thank you very much. I need to start working on my Aussie accent now.
You did. And you had to go through a few hoops and everything to get there. See, for me, it was really easy, mate. I was just born and they gave
just
me a
passport,
mate. kept it simple,
but
for you, it was a little bit more a bit more challenging. So let's go back. All right. So you've got a wife and a couple of boys. One of them with a mean mullet at the moment. You must be proud of that one, mate.
Correct.
For the listeners out there, the mullet is an Australian trend that keeps recirculating its ugly head, literally in about every 10, 15 years. But the mullet's big. I think all the kids that I coach in footy at the moment, Chris, are sporting little mullets as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right, cool. So, when did you make the move, and what visa did you arrive on to Australia?
My family and I lived in Somerset in England pretty much our whole lives, and we eventually got fed up with the weather, and we moved here with the help of the DUC in September 2019 with a 189 permanent skilled visa. We moved straight to Adelaide despite having never been here and just fell in love with the place, and we've been here ever since.
Nice. And you were the main applicant for the visa?
I was. Yep. That's right. I came over as a software engineer.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, cool. So you arrived. First thoughts of Australia, mate?
Oh, it's better than I expected. I mean, it was a bit of a leap of faith. We'd never been to Australia. I mean, you know, these days you can see a lot and learn a lot online. And we had some friends out here as well. So we weren't completely blind, but we'd never been to Australia before. We just packed our whole lives up and came out here. And it exceeded expectations. Just beautiful beaches. Lovely weather, lots of things to do outdoors, just fantastic.
It seems like such a common thing for people not to actually head to, you know, been to Australia before, then make the move, which is really cool, I reckon. It's really,
yeah.
Makes it exciting, but I bet you would have been really daunting, actually, when you first, you first open the doors out and you get out and about into Australia. Do you remember your very first thought, like, whoa, are we doing the right thing? Or was it, wow, this is good? Or was it stinking hot? What was it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a real range of emotions, some real highs and some real lows. You know, I remember just the first time we went to a beach when we got here and feeling completely overwhelmed with happiness. And then I also remember almost having a panic attack. One of the first nights, I just woke up in the middle of the night and I felt so lonely, so isolated. We had nothing. We sold everything. We just had a few suitcases and I knew nothing about the place. I was almost in tears in the middle of the night in bed, wondering the stupidest things like, oh man, I don't even know where to take my kid to get a haircut, things like that. So all over the place, but you know, it settles down eventually and you stop worrying about those things. But yeah, it was it was pretty crazy to begin with.
Well, going back to my bad joke at the start, mate, I still don't think you found a good place to take your kid to get a haircut. but anyway, we'll bypass that one. All right, so so you started the visa process. How did you go about starting the visa process, mate?
It's like a lot of people. You do the English test and you do the skills assessment, and then once that looks good, you go ahead and actually apply for the visa, or expression of interest, and apply for the visa. So yeah. We wanted to do it for a really long time. We were like, It took probably 10 years of wanting to do it before we actually did it. Life kicked, you know. I think there was a global financial crisis that wiped all the equity out of our house, and that put a stop to it. And then we had kids, and that put a stop to it. And yeah, it took a long time for us to get to the point where we could actually get it going. But yeah, once we decided to do it, once we knew we could do it, it was a relatively straightforward process.
Yeah,
at least for us.
Yeah, well, back then, mate, I think everything was a good process. And, you know, you arrived in 2019. You just before the big friend COVID. It seems like lots of the people that I interview in these podcasts have a COVID story. You have a COVID story, mate? You must have just arrived before when it happened.
Yeah, it was a bit of a tumultuous time for us. We got here in September, and then we went through the Black Summer. We weren't exactly directly impacted by that. It's not like our house was burnt down, but there were a lot of fires in and around South Australia as well as the rest of the country, and it was kind of scary. You know, we didn't expect to see that much smoke, could smell that much smoke, find ash all over our car on several occasions, that type of thing.
Very real.
Yeah, so that was kind of nuts. And I mean, you see a lot of bad stuff on the TV at the same time. So we were pretty much just getting over the Black Summer when COVID started, and then we had to endure some lockdowns as well. I think that we were probably luckier than some. Like, I didn't lose my job or anything like that, and we were on a permanent visa, so we didn't get turfed out of the country. But it was not easy. There were times where we were just at the drop of a hat told by the state government to not leave our homes, and that's daunting, you know. That's scary. It definitely, I think, it took the shine off of the first sort of 6-12 months a little bit. But you know, I don't think we had it quite as bad as others. So in South Australia, we didn't have it as bad as places like Victoria, where it was severely locked down. And look, I also think it's important to note, like, I'm really grateful that we got in when we did. I know that a lot of people, they didn't get to Australia because of COVID for a very long time. So
yeah,
I'm pretty grateful for that.
What a great attitude to have, mate. I love people that appreciate the things. We don't, you know, we've got to look forward to things, look at the things that have worked. And
yeah,
maybe exactly. The first 6 months, you know, big bushfires coming in, COVID to deal with. But obviously you've stuck it out, mate, because you're now an Aussie. So let's talk about that process. So you, what was it like? Actually, let's go back. Before you talk about how you became a citizen, at what point did you and the family sit down and say, hey, when you left, this is a really awkward question. Well, I'm making this question awkward. Chris, you arrived in Oz. You would have said, I'm sure you and the family would have said, look, let's give it 12 months, 6 months, a year. Was there a time that you gave it before you'd make the call on, you know, staying?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked about it a few times, but I think we always said that we had to give it at least 2 years.
Yep.
I actually didn't need to give it 2 years. I knew really early on that I loved this place. It's not that I really don't like England. It's just that I was looking for a better outdoor lifestyle and a change of scenery, and I got that in heaps right from day one. So I knew quite early on that it was good for me. I think it took my wife a little while longer. But you know, we always said 2 years, and if we still like it, we're staying. And to be honest, there was never really a point in time where we were like, okay, it's been 2 years, we're staying. I don't think we've ever actually really had a conversation about going back. Good. So yeah. And in terms of like, looking ahead to becoming a citizen, I think that was always on my mind, even before we got out here. It was always the plan, you know, if we stayed in Australia, we wanted to become citizens.
Because lots don't. So, when I say lots don't, you have a choice, correct? So you arrive, you're on a five-year visa, a permanent residency visa, and after 4 years of living and working in Australia, or actually not even really working, just living in Australia, you then have an option to apply to be a citizen. And what some people do is they don't. They might apply for a return to residency visa, which starts from another 5 years. On that permanent residency visa. So you decided that you guys want to become citizens. So how does it work, mate? Just talk to the listeners, mate, and just run through. So what's the first thing you do, and what triggers it? Firstly, what triggers it?
Well, for us, I think what triggered it for us was that we wanted this sort of sense of belonging and security. I don't really know what the future holds, but I love living here, and I don't really want anything to jeopardize that. And it's also important to me that my children are citizens as well. I don't want anything to impede their progress into adulthood. Plus, I want the right to vote. It's important for me to have a say in the democracy. And we love to travel, so I want an Aussie passport. I don't want to be applying for a resident return visas every 5 years. Yep. I mean, the cost of the the resident return visa is pretty much the same as the citizenship. So I didn't want that hassle.
So, Chris, when you were, and you've only been a citizen for a couple of days, to be honest, but when you were a permanent resident, were you ever looking at it going, oh, I wish I was? Was there ever a situation where you're like, oh, I wish I was a citizen because of this, or you did really well as a PR holder?
No, there were a couple of times. So I live in Adelaide, as I said, and there's a reasonably big defence sector here. So there have been a couple of times over the last few years where I've seen some pretty good looking jobs in the defense sector, and I probably would have applied to work for them, but I couldn't, because they're defense jobs. You can only work in them if you are security cleared, and you can only get that security clearance if you're a citizen.
Gotcha.
So that's one of the reasons why why I would have liked it sooner, but it wasn't a big deal. It's not like there aren't plenty of other jobs.
Okay, so generally speaking, people never really talk about the difference between being a PR and a citizen. When I explain to clients on the phone, when you apply for PR, you've sort of got the same rights as an Australian. You're just going to have a funny accent for a while, sometimes a lot longer, like yourself, mate. Maybe that will never leave. But it just happens. Okay, so you arrived in 2019, and we're 2024. So exactly. But as soon as you were here for 4 years, or as soon as you made the threshold, did you you then fill in how did it work from there, mate?
Yeah, so like you said earlier, I think you have to have been in the country for 4 years. There are some conditions related to extended time out of the country that mean you have to wait a little longer, but we hadn't actually left the country. So I pretty much applied as soon as I could. So 4 years from the moment that I activated the visa when I stepped off the plane, I lodged the application for citizenship by conferral. And you do that in the same IMEI account as you do as you lodge your visa application.
Okay.
So I actually applied for myself, but I also applied for my wife and my kids too. My wife needed a separate application, but my kids just get added to mine because they're under 15.
Yeah. Okay. So you apply, and then how long ago from you apply did you get contact back?
So I think I received an acknowledgement immediately, and then I waited for around about a month. So I waited about a month, and then I got an email that invited my wife and I to a citizenship test.
Okay. What's the test like? What do you have to do? Like, just what's the environment like? How does it work? Is it online? Do you have a venue?
Well, the test is held at an immigration center, like an office in the CBD. Well, at least that's where it is here in Adelaide. It's on Waymar Street in the CBD. Only my wife and I had to take the test. The kids are exempt. They don't have to do anything. You go to the immigration center on the day of the test, and you're given a ticket on arrival, and you're asked to show some ID, and then you get where you wait around to be called to a counter where you provide some more details to a clerk who I think she checks some application details to make sure they were in order. And then they sort of send you over to a test room then where you undertake the actual test. The test is conducted on an iPad, and it's a fairly relaxed affair. You sit in a room.
Are you in a group or is it individual?
It's a individual test, obviously, but you're in a, I mean, the test room is full of people, so it's a big group of people. There are a lot of people there on the day. I don't think it's open all the time. I think they just run test sessions a few times a month. So quite a few people turned up to do the test.
Test, mate, you've got obviously those questions, right? So how did you know what questions were going to be asked? Were you anxious about that, or did you how do you research all that?
Well, you have to revise a little bit. So at least I think you should. Let's put it that way. There is an official document and an associated podcast called Our Common Bond, which I think is a must. Everybody should read that if you're going to go through this process. It's not too long. It's maybe an hour, the podcast in total. But then there are quite a few, let's say, unofficial online mock test sites which I think are worth using too. So I'm a bit of a history buff. I'd actually learned quite a lot about Australian history before the test. So I had a pretty good grasp on those sorts of things. But there are other, I think there are some other questions in there that are a little bit, well, you would need to revise, right? You would have to know they were coming to get them right. It's the kind of questions that aren't common knowledge. Like, what year did the gold rush start, for example? Or what is the emblem in the middle of the Torres Strait Island flag? Those sorts of things. So it's a good idea to revise just to get those, get the answers to those kinds of questions fixed in your mind.
It sounds hard, mate. It sounds like lots of Aussies would probably get lots of it wrong. Was it like how long do you get to, like, how long does a test go for? It's like an hour, half an hour?
Yeah, it's I think the official limit's 45 minutes, but I honestly, if you've revised, if you're not actually having to think too much about each question, you'll probably get it done in 10.
Is it multiple choice?
Yeah, there are 20 multiple choice questions, and you need a mark of 75% to pass. However, there is a caveat. Five of the 20 are, in quotes, Australian values questions that you have to answer correctly. All five of them you must answer correctly to pass.
Wow.
For those of us, though, from a Western background, they're painfully obvious. So people shouldn't stress too much about those. So, yeah, I think a little bit of revision, virtually everybody's going to pass.
Okay. Gives hope. Gives hope. I hate doing tests, mate. I mean, driving tests and everything like that. When something comes up and it's multiple choice, you feel that you've got a little bit of a chance if you get stuck.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, worst case, you've got a 25% chance of getting it right.
So, all right, you rock up. You go there to in South Australia. There's a whole lot of people. You're sitting there with your iPad. You jump out. You got 45 minutes to finish it. You come out of it. Are you told on the day you score?
Yeah.
You are. Okay.
Yeah, you are. You get your test results immediately after the test in the test center, which is good, actually. I'm really glad they do that, because otherwise you'd walk out wondering. So you find out immediately whether you've passed the test or not. I do think for those people that fail the test, I believe you get a rerun. You can do a repeat test for free, potentially on the day, actually, if they have time. But otherwise, they'll invite you back at a different time.
So you come out of there, you're told that you passed, then so you now know that you're going to become a citizen?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. So having said that, they say, well, you're going to hear from us with next steps. For us, and I think it varies, obviously, but for us, it took a couple of months before we heard anything from the Department of Immigration.
They don't move quick.
No. But we received some emails, each of us, notifying us that our applications were successful, and we were invited to a citizenship ceremony.
Wow. Let's talk about the ceremony. So,
yeah.
What ceremony sounds good, mate. Every time the word ceremony comes up to me, it sounds like a party, a celebration, you know,
yeah.
The word ceremony. Yeah. So you rock up, mate. Is it boring? Is it fun? You know, create a scene, mate.
Yeah. So ceremony was to be held at a local council-run theatre. And the invite suggests that you should wear pretty smart clothes or national dress. And for us, it was just a couple of days ago at there's a theatre in Noarlunga Centre in Adelaide. In fact, I'm looking at the gifts and the paperwork on my desk right now. I wouldn't say it's boring at all, unless you're maybe, you know, one of my children who had their head on their hand for most of it. I think they found some of it a little bit boring, but for me, it was awesome. So there was the mayor and the council CEO, they discussed citizenship and what it means to be a citizen. Then there was a welcome to country ceremony. There was live music, Aboriginal dance, you know, that sort of thing.
But were there many people there, mate? You said when you did the test, you're in a big room. So for example, when you first did the test and you're in the room with your iPad, how many people were there? It was like 5, 10, 20, 30?
Oh, yeah, it's probably 30 in the time. Okay. But in the theatre, I reckon there was probably 50, 60 people, something like that.
Wow, that's not That's not too many, because if you can see, you're talking 50, 60 families or just in total 50, 60 people?
No, in total, maybe 50, 60. So I can imagine that in some council areas, it's much bigger. You know, this is a reasonably small city and a reasonably small council. So it doesn't surprise me that there weren't loads and loads, but it there were enough. It felt like, you know, maybe there was 100. It was a big room, so maybe there was 100. But it was that kind of number.
And when you, and when they're doing all the, I guess, the celebration stuff and everything, are you sitting there or are you standing? Like, do you get involved?
Yeah, no, we were sat. As I said, they go through this process where they talk about what it means to be a citizen, and there's the live music and the dance. Then there's some politicians that talk about government, local government, and elections, and then you actually get to participate a little bit. So those of us that become citizens are invited onto the stage in groups to take a citizenship pledge. So that's where you pledge your loyalty to Australia and its people. And everybody that wants to become a citizen has to do that. How do you pledge, Chris? How do you do that?
Do they read something out and you put your hand somewhere?
Yeah, you literally stand there and you say the pledge of loyalty to Australia. It's I can't remember exactly what it is now, but it's a few sentences. Too,
Chris. The boys have to do that as well.
I don't think all kids have to, but our kids are old enough for me to encourage them to come down and do it, and they did, and I'm glad they did because we got some nice photos from it. And you know, it's at that point that the mayor gives you your certificate and a small gift as well. So it was pretty nice.
Oh man, it's huge! It's huge news. I mean, to think about—I know this is a bit strange for you because your kids, your boys are only just, you know, early teenagers and all that—but to think that your grandkids, kids, and everything and that are going to have like dual citizenships now, like that's massive.
Exactly.
Travel and futures and everything.
It was a fantastic ceremony. I honestly couldn't stop smiling through the whole thing. It was a really proud moment for me.
Do they put on drinks and food or anything?
No, I thought they might, but they didn't actually.
I was thinking, like, I see in my mind, you're walking into like a little party, and they got like, you walk in, you get a bottle of Foster's, mate, a couple of Tim Tams, barbecue shapes. Go in there,
dairy bread,
and you come out with
definitely.
You come out holding the didgeridoo, being extreme, you know, learning how to play it, and a passport in your hand. At what point do you actually get your passport, mate?
Well, now that we've got our certificates, I think you have to give the bureaucracy a few days to get itself into order, and then you can apply for the passport. So I'll probably do that next week.
Excuse me. So how long in total was the ceremony for?
Oh, it's about an hour and a half, something like that. You know, it didn't feel like that. It was really good. You know, it was well run, and it was quite fun. There was some singing, some dancing. Yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah, it does sound. It sounds interesting. It's going back to the test and everything like that. What you said, you listened to a podcast, but did you revise a lot for it, or was it just like you sort of skimmed over it because you knew it was like obvious, or was it quite? Yeah, was it challenging?
I would say that it's going to vary, right? So if you're a bit anxious, then you should probably revise more. But if you do the kind of revision that allows you to conduct mock tests, you can start to get a good sense for how much more revision you need to do. In actual fact, like, I know that my wife found it easier to just do the mock tests. She learned by doing tests, you know, test, test, test. You fail the test, you do it again, and you get different questions each time, and do enough tests, eventually you start to build up a sense for whether or not you're capable of passing the real test.
Yeah. It's a good trick.
I would definitely say, like, you should do that to alleviate any anxiety going into the real test, and to be a bit more prepared for it. And I don't think you'll need to spend more than a few hours doing that, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know, the whole thought of a test. I know so many people, Chris, so many that we do RRR visas for that just are petrified of the test. Like there's like horror stories about it, and you've sort of made it sound, I think, again, I said at the start, I like your attitude with it. You know, I think it's nice to have that good attitude about it. It is a bit challenging, but the reward of becoming a citizen, it just speaks volumes at the end. It's like the final, I guess it's like the, I wouldn't say closure, but it's like the end, like the last piece of this huge puzzle in migration from the day that you signed up with us all the way back in 2018 to now the, was the end of the, it was the end of April. The 30th of April that you got it in 2024. It's such a journey in that closure. Do you feel that? Do you feel better by being a citizen?
Yeah, definitely. It's fantastic. And actually, you know, it's more than just 2018 to now. It's all the years before that where you're planning and strategizing. So it's really the culmination of over a decade, I think, of dreaming, hard work and sacrifice. We feel really proud to have got here. I'm very, very privileged to have had the opportunity.
Yeah, it is. It's so good. I think lots of it's so hard. It's challenging. What would you say would have been the most challenging part of the whole migration process? You know, was it the waiting? Was it the immigrating? What was it for you, mate?
It's probably that period that you get your visa and you have to, you know, you have to pack up your life in one country and make that transition to the next country. So for us, that, you know, that was difficult. You, like, logistically that's difficult, but it's emotionally very difficult because you're saying goodbye to everything you know and everybody you know. And then you find yourself in a strange country where you don't really know many people at all and you have to start again. I would say that's by far and away the hardest part of the whole process. But I would also say that it's, well, at least for us, it's been absolutely worth it. Very, very hard work, but really worth it.
Well, you guys are very outdoorsy people. You are always out and about, which is good to see. What about what are some of your favourite places in South Australia, mate?
Oh, I would say that we actually live in my favourite place. We really love it in Florio Peninsula. So the south of Metro Adelaide. We live in Onkaparinga Council, near Port Nolunga. Beautiful, beautiful beaches down here. I mean, it's one of the main draw cards, I think, for the areas, the beaches. So that was what, that was why we moved to this part of the city. But there are lots of other really nice places here. I mean, I still really love going to the city. I really love the CBD. We come from a small town, so we like to spend a bit of time in the city because we didn't really grow up with that. So yeah, we go there quite a lot too. And my happy place is probably the footy oval. That's where I really love to go.
which footy oval, mate? Not Port Adelaide.
Yeah, Adelaide Oval to go and watch Port Adelaide play.
Yeah, we just did a podcast with South Australia government, and the guy was saying that as well, like how he started off with our big AFLs over here, and it's huge, but only really in, you know, South Australia, Victoria, WA, Queensland, and South Australia, they're right to their rugby still. Northern Territories, I guess, a little bit of a mixture of both. Oh, no, that's good. And going back to your beaches, what I notice about the area that you are, it always seems the beaches, you just see like they're always empty. It's weird. They're so beautiful, but they're empty. Is they just so big? Or is it just like stretches and stretches of sand, is it?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it's because there's so many beaches. So the metro coastline is almost a continuous beach from Outer Harbour, which is right up north on the coast, all the way down to sort of Sea Cliff. So there's kilometers and kilometers of beach along the metro coastline. And then once you get over the hill, it's a similar story, really. It's almost continuous beach all the way down to, well, Selix Beach. So there's so much of it. I think that's why. There are some busy beaches. Port Nolunga gets pretty busy when it's warm. But never to the point where it's uncomfortable. Never.
Yeah, it's a bit mad in the UK when you go to the beach when you get the few hot days and it's just like crazy busy. You sort of feel like
everybody goes to That's right. Everybody goes to one or two particular beaches and it's absolute bedlam, but it's nothing like that here. And to be honest, you know, as someone that lives around here, you know where all the quiet spots are. So if you want to have a quiet time at the beach, you know exactly where to go.
Yeah, no, it sounds good. I know we are, like, we're really lucky, like on the peninsula here in Victoria, that they have camping pretty much from, I think it's the start of November all the way through to the week of Easter. To the weekend of Easter, and people can camp on the foreshore, Chris, which is, you've basically got this one road in and one road out, Nepean Highway, and then there's lots of campers and all that. Where we are, we're quite lucky there's no camping there, so we're just like a couple of minutes walk and you're just over there, and it's just, I don't know, it's just really nice. But again, the beaches, there's always lots of room, which is a big, which is like a big help. All right, so what are your plans, mate? Like, obviously, when your passport comes and everything like that, it's done. You know, that's it for you then when it comes to the immigration side. You're finished.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, I need some new goals now. Oh, the next goal is to get some flying certification and then move up to Far North Queensland and fly people over the Great Barrier Reef. That's my long-term goal.
Oh, well, just remember me for interviewing that podcast, mate, the Great Barrier Reef. I remember swimming with the – oh, mate, Great Barrier Reef is just brilliant.
Oh god, yeah,
what a goal to have, mate, to be high in the sky over those you know, that area, because the weather up that way is just it does get a bit humid, I guess, in the hotter months of the year, but wow, what a place to be.
Yeah, no, I can't wait. That's the plan.
All right, well, look, Chris, I just want to thank you, mate, for sharing your and congratulate as well for being Aussie now.
Thank you.
You are, it's official, you're a real you're a fair dinkum Aussie, and that's a big achievement. That whole process you went through, you've got a wonderful attitude, mate. And thanks again for sharing your citizenship journey with the listeners. Cheers, mate, and all the best with everything that's coming forward in the future.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. See you guys.